You always kind of have a 5-year plan or a 10-year plan. I'm just helping kids, whatever I'm doing.
A national honor for an Anchorage Elementary school teacher. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, November 22nd. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, an eyewitness story from Standing Rock.
Really opened my eyes about the dedication of the people opening up the camp for all and welcoming people.
That and more on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. It's a fact, 85% of Alaska Native and American Indian people don't use illegal drugs. For more resources on building a healthy life, visit anthc.org/weare. This message sponsored by ANTHC, a nonprofit organization.
Heidelberg Mayor Anthony Christensen has been appointed the new chair of the Federal Subsistence Board. The board governs subsistence hunting and fishing on all federal land in Alaska, covering some 60% of the state. It's been at the center of major controversies like the fight over king salmon on the Yukon and Kuskokwim rivers. Christensen has served on the board for 4 years. He says as chairman, his job will be to listen to everyone.
I like to keep an open ear and listen to what everybody has to say. It's almost like listening to testimony. So you just, you know, got to go in, got to be really unbiased.
The Interior Department announced Christensen's appointment today. At 40, he's been mayor of Heidelberg on Prince of Wales Island in southeast Alaska for more than a decade. He's run the local tribe's environmental program for almost 20 years. Christensen was first appointed to the Subsistence Board in 2012 when the Interior Department overhauled it, adding 2 seats for members of the public to give rural residents more of a say. Christensen says listening to local residents is essential, and his own experience hunting and fishing has shaped how he views the board's mission.
Eating it every day, of handing that tradition down to my family and showing them why it's important that we have strong environmental programs, that we have regulations, that we have management plans to protect a way of life for ourselves, I think is critical to the future of Alaska.
Christensen is replacing outgoing chair Tim Towerak of Unalakleet. Anchorage Elementary teacher Paul Campbell was surprised to learn today that he is the recipient of the Milken Educator Award from the Milken Family Foundation. The foundation is a national group which has goals of improving education, public health, and medical research. The award is given to recognize teachers for their dedication to both their school and their communities. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early has more.
The Milken Educator Award goes to Paul Campbell.
Thirty-year-old Paul Campbell was certainly surprised at his selection as a Milken Educator. Milken Senior Vice President Dr. Jane Foley describes the award as a, quote, Oscar for teaching. Most people in the Chester Valley Elementary lunchroom didn't know the purpose of the all-school assembly they were attending. Chester Valley Principal Adrian Grenier was one of few people in on the secret.
It was easy for me because I tucked myself in the corner just now. And then the way I told staff was, this is going to be a social-emotional learning assembly focusing on being thankful. So in my mind, that's what I had it as. So that's what I was planning for.
The assembly began with introductions from Dr. Dina Paramo, the Anchorage School District Superintendent, and Dr. Michael Johnson, Alaska's Education Commissioner, and 2008 Milken Award recipient. Foley then announced that Campbell was the newest Alaskan Milken educator. Campbell says he was discussing proper assembly behavior with his students when his name was called.
I was sitting next to a few of my awesome first grade students, talking to them about how we sit in assembly and how we, well, whispering to them, how we make sure we're looking at the speaker and following our assembly guidelines.
Campbell teaches first and second graders at Chester Valley Elementary in a looped classroom, which means that the students he has in first grade will be his students in the second grade. Among other criteria, Foley said that Campbell was recognized for the ways that he instilled critical thinking and socio-emotional development in his students. He says a method that he uses to help engage his students is singing.
For one, first graders, how fun is singing?
Yeah. Super fun? Yeah, it's super fun. Also, it combines our class together, and it brings us together as one school family, one classroom family. So it's super important for us to build that community.
The Milken Educator Award is given out nationally to teachers who have demonstrated excellent education achievement. Dr. Foley says up to 35 teachers across the country will be recognized this year. Campbell is the 15th Anchorage teacher ever to get the award. Among the other guests of the assembly were past Milken Education Award winners from Alaska, including Campbell's former teacher, Robert Woods, who is also unaware Campbell was going to be honored.
I did not know he was selected. The whole assembly, I'm looking across and at him as a past student. So they announced his name, and that just pride just comes to you immediately, going, so well deserved. And as we noticed, he's totally shocked, going, why am I any greater than anybody else?
Principal Grenier says the award was a great way to remind people of the work that teachers do and often aren't recognized for.
So I think moments like this are so important because it takes a step back and recognizes a whole teacher. And it really looks at all the things that people like Mr. Campbell do, and how he connects with his kids, and just like they were talking about how they sing songs in class all the time, and just all of that importance of connection with the kids, because they're not going to be interested in learning if they don't connect with our teachers.
Aside from recognition, the Milken Educator Award also comes with a $25,000 check. When asked what he plans to spend it on, Campbell initially thought of his family.
My wife and I, we have a new baby girl, a 4.5-month-old child, so maybe college fund. I don't know, off the top of this grenier, maybe some new things here for school.
The Milken Foundation describes the award as one for people in their early to mid-careers rather than a lifetime achievement award. While Campbell is early in his career, Chester Valley is the first school he's taught at, he's looking forward both in a daily and yearly way.
My next step is we're going to finish our turkeys this afternoon for our Thanksgiving project. I don't even know if I can wrap my head quite around the next transition. I mean, we always kind of have a 5-year plan or a 10-year plan. I'm just helping kids, whatever I'm doing.
When Campbell walked into his classroom following the assembly, his students gathered around him to show him the pictures they drew of him getting his award. One student even drew him a congratulatory pizza. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, North Slope schools focus on Inupiaq history.
It means that we're able to fulfill the wishes of our elders who have been expressing this idea of being inclusive of who we are in the classrooms.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. And by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to having conversations that help businesses and individuals succeed financially, because an open dialogue can open doors. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
Alaska's largest city could see a sales tax. Anchorage Assemblymember Bill Evans is readying a measure to go before the body that could bring a 4% tax on goods and services.
People have been pretty upset about the rising property taxes. There's a limit to what I think you can bear in property taxes in a municipality this size. So diversifying the revenue stream, I think, makes a lot of sense and takes in some people that currently aren't paying taxes in Anchorage, people that are commuting here, tourists, things like that.
According to Evans, the sales tax is designed to offset property taxes dollar for dollar. Evans says by shifting the city's revenue sources without expanding the size of the budget, the measure is designed to stay below the municipality's tax cap.
If property taxes in the city start to decline, which is a very real possibility given the state's situation, the city could be in a huge problem because everything is just so loaded onto those property taxes. It would be much more sensible to have at least a couple irons in the fire as for how you determine your revenues.
Evans acknowledges that with legislators in Juneau also floating the idea of a statewide sales tax, there's the possibility of double burdening Anchorage residents. He also says that in order to combat the regressive nature of a sales tax, he's included provisions to exempt essential goods like rent, food, prescription medicines, utility payments, heating fuels, and child care services.
I think, you know, one of the hardest hit groups right now are people that are sort of the more or less working poor who have a house, but, you know, that increasing property tax that they can't get out from almost threatens their ability to keep their house.
The measure has a long way to go. Evans hopes to file it within a week, bringing it before the Assembly for action this winter after public testimony. If the body passes it, the measure would go before Anchorage voters in the April municipal election, where it needs 60% approval. There has never been a sales tax in the municipality. A 2006 measure to introduce one failed. The Alaska Marine Highway System should break into two agencies to prepare for the future. That's the conclusion of a new ferry governance study released by the Southeast Conference. That's a regional development organization. Report author John Waterhouse says scheduling, pricing, and similar management areas would be handled by a public corporation owned by the state.
Give the folks operating the ferries the flexibility and tools to evaluate their routes and revenue and to really do what they need to do in terms of making the system as efficient and provide as much benefit as is financially possible to the core user groups.
Waterhouse of Seattle-based Elliott Bay Design Group produced the report with Juneau research firm McDowell Group. He presented it at Monday's Marine Transportation Advisory Committee. Craig Mayer, Dennis Watson, heads up the committee overseeing the governance study. He says marine highway assets would remain the property of a state agency.
The state may maintain ownership and control of the vessels and the terminals and whatnot, allows them to be able to get federal funding, you know, to do maintenance and capital improvements on them.
The study recommends several interim changes. They include forward funding the system and giving the Marine Highway control over labor negotiations. Those could be difficult to get through the legislature. Watson, who manages a small ferry system in Southeast Alaska, calls the plan a starting point. Marine Highway officials say they support the study and any efforts to improve the system. Report author Waterhouse says the next step will be to develop a business plan. North Slope government and history are now part of a high school graduation requirements for local schools. The curriculum change is mandatory for students, beginning with freshmen who start high school in 2017. The Inupiaq Education Director for the North Slope Borough School District, Jana Harcherick, says the change has been years in the making.
And it goes back probably to the formation of the North Slope Borough School District when founding Mayor Eben Hobson, in a speech, said that our schools will reflect the ideologies of the Inupiat, that our schools will reflect who we are as people.
Students will receive one credit towards social studies requirements by taking the North Slope government class and a North Slope history class. Harcherick says this class material will be integrated into what's already being taught instead of creating a separate class entirely.
So we've developed and implemented a series of what we call culture-based units. So as a district, we've been producing units for teachers to integrate into their teaching from kindergarten or K-3, K-4 all the way up through grade 12. So this would just become part of that work.
Harcherick does not believe the curriculum changes will increase costs for the school district. She says teaching students about their background and their Inupiaq history is beneficial beyond helping students get a job after they graduate.
They need to learn about how our people use Western tools through federal legislation and the formation, for example, of the North Slope Borough, our regional corporations, our village corporations, as tools to advance the Inupiaq agenda and to protect our subsistence lifeways, to protect the rights that we have as people to land, to education.
As a person who identifies as Inupiaq, Harcherick recognizes the significance of incorporating North Slope local government and history into an Inupiaq student's education.
It means that we're able to fulfill the wishes of our elders and our people who have been expressing this idea of being inclusive of who we are in the classrooms. It helps ground them in who they are from a historical perspective, because it is by knowing from where you came that you're able to maneuver more effectively in this day and age.
The next step for expanding education related to local Native history is to share the curriculum practices with people around the globe. Harcherek says by 2018, the North Slope Borough School District's goal is to help schools in Russia, Canada, and Greenland incorporate their own local history into government classes. The University of Alaska Southeast is expanding two community partnerships in Juneau to better protect students and employees from sex or gender-based discrimination. According to the Alaska Justice Statistical Analysis Center at the University of Alaska Anchorage, in a survey, one out of every eight UAS students said they experienced some form of sexual misconduct or sexual assault between 2015 and 2016. KTOO's Quentin Chandler reports.
The University of Alaska Southeast wants to give its students and employees more options and information when they experience sexual discrimination. Lori Klein tracks reports of sex and gender-based discrimination for the university as its Title IX coordinator.
Dating violence, domestic violence, gender-based discrimination, sexual assault, sexual harassment, the whole gamut. This year so far, we are with 5 months into the academic year, we're at 17 reports.
Klein says there were 10 reports from students and employees last academic year. The reports are for all three campuses in Juneau, Ketchikan, and Sitka. To improve the university's options for students and employees, Klein says they're leaning on pre-existing partnerships with the Juneau Police Department and the advocacy group AWARE. The acronym stands for Aiding Women in Abuse and Rape Emergencies. Mandy Cole is the deputy director of AWARE. Starting near the end of January, her group plans to give students access to an advocate for at least 2 hours a week inside the JPD substation on the UAS campus in Juneau.
Maybe they were sexually assaulted. Maybe they had an uncomfortable experience they're not sure how to process. And they want to talk to someone about it without necessarily triggering the kind of response from the university.
UAS and JPD also have a new agreement to improve their coordination on cases of discrimination. Klein says that's important because university employees and students who are victims of crime have rights under the law, and they have administrative rights granted through the university.
And so our opportunity is with JPD is for me to provide some training to them about what those administrative rights are, for them to help me understand what legal rights are, so that if a student comes and speaks with me, I can better explain what it would mean if they made a call to JPD.
A JPD spokesman said the police and the university have had a robust relationship for a long time, and this new agreement is a logical next step. In Juneau, I'm Quentin Chandler.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com.
Alaska's Tobacco Quitline reminds you that 88% of Alaskans don't allow smoking in their home. A smoke-free environment helps prepare kids for a healthier life and a future free from tobacco. And it makes good economic sense. Secondhand smoke damages property, decreasing its value. Exposure to its toxins leads to disease and increased medical costs. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline.
On the chilly plains of North Dakota, organizers estimate that around 2,500 people are now gathered near the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation to support the Great Sioux Nation, or Ouachiti Chakawin, in their efforts to stop an oil pipeline from crossing under the Missouri River near the reservation. Recently, two Athabascan men from Alaska were among them. Daisha Eaton has this special report from Cannonball, North Dakota.
The gathering is the biggest show of Native solidarity in living memory. It's being compared to the occupation of Wounded Knee in 1973. Since this past April, people have converged at camps near Cannonball to support the tribe's efforts to stop the pipeline. By August, around 6,000 Native and non-Native people had gathered there. The numbers dropped off when summer ended, but the camp has swelled again in recent weeks. Camp organizers estimated on Monday that about 2,500 people were at all three camps combined. Some people participate in direct actions, peaceful protests near the path of the pipeline. Samuel Johns says that's where the trouble comes in. Johns, an Anchorage resident who's Otna and Gwich'in Athabascan, originally from Copper Center, arrived November 16th. He says he saw demonstrators return to camp from direct actions hurt by local law enforcement.
That police brutality is real.
Clashes between police and demonstrators have been documented by journalists and through social media posts. They've resulted in more than 400 arrests. On Sunday, demonstrators reported being shot by law enforcement with rubber bullets and water cannons in below-freezing temperatures. Organizers report several went to the hospital for treatment. John says it's important to take a stand against the use of excessive force.
These people are innocent. They are unarmed. They don't have anything. They just want to protect the water, and they're being maced. They're being shot by rubber bullets.
John says despite the violence, the unity of the water protectors is inspiring.
There's people from all over the world there, and they're there to help protect the water, and it's really beautiful. It's really powerful.
John stayed for about a week. He helped weatherize structures there. He says the work was rewarding, but he adds that just being at the camp was incredibly moving.
We came here and we were treated like family, and I didn't spend any money in that camp. I worked, and they fed me and kept me warm. It's just beautiful. When you go there, there's no currency, and there's really even no time, and it's like the way things used to be. Before colonization, before capitalism, you go to Standing Rock and you'll experience something that you've never experienced in your life. But your soul and your spirit will feel at peace because it's how it used to be for us.
The $3.7 billion, nearly 1,200-mile-long pipeline is being built by a Texas-based corporation called Energy Transfer Partners. In order to complete the pipeline, the company wants to drill under the Missouri River. The pipeline would ship crude oil across four states. The tribe says the pipeline is a threat to their water supply and that construction threatens sacred sites. The federal government has halted construction, but the companies building the pipeline have asked a federal court to let them complete the project. Fred John Jr., an Otna Athabascan elder from Delta Junction, also traveled to the camp. He helped feed campers in a makeshift kitchen while he was there. John says he's also concerned that local law enforcement are overstepping.
What really get me is police force. They come with their stick. They come with their mace against peaceful protectors. And it doesn't seem right to me. We have more right to be on that land. It's tribal land plus contested treaty land.
Demonstrators have been occupying privately owned land in the path of the pipeline, claiming that they are the land's rightful owners under an 1851 treaty with the U.S. government. John says the violence against demonstrators is troubling, but he was also impressed by the dedication of local tribes.
I found out being down here, it's something that really opened my eyes about the dedication of the people opening up the camp for work, for all, and welcoming people and sharing with people.
John says once he's back in Alaska, he'll work to rally support for the Standing Rock Sioux tribe.
I'm going back to Alaska, and I'm going to write up what I seen, what I heard, and I hope we could get another group come down here to help out for the winter, because up in Alaska we know how to live in the wintertime, and they need that help here.
Samuel Johns says he also feels called to bring more help to the tribe.
They're our brothers, they're our sisters, and we need to show that to them. We need to show them our solidarity. We need to show them that we support them, because the same thing is going to happen to our region. Same thing is going to happen to my people. You know, one day the government might try to open Anwar. And if they try to open Anwar, we need to take a stand. We need to stand. That's why I'm down here.
The men say they hope to return to Standing Rock soon with a group to help with construction and winterization projects before the bitter North Dakota winter sets in. In Cannonball, North Dakota, I'm Daisha Eaton.
An environmental group is suing the Federal Railroad Administration for failing to disclose the approval process for the Alaska Railroad's application for rail shipments of highly volatile liquefied natural gas. The Alaska Railroad would make the nation's first rail shipments of LNG. The Center for Biological Diversity filed the lawsuit in U.S. District Court in Washington, D.C. on Monday. Miyoko Sakashita, a senior attorney for the organization, says in a news release that the federal agency has largely ignored a February public records request seeking records or information about the hazards of carrying LNG. The Railroad Administration, in October of 2015, issued a two-year permit authorizing three round-trip trains between Anchorage and Fairbanks per week. Just ahead of the Thanksgiving holiday, Alaska's Department of Transportation says it has seen a 34% increase in the number of deaths from car crashes so far this year. In a press release on Tuesday, the state's transportation department says 75 people have died in vehicle wrecks as of November 21st, compared to 56 fatalities up to this point last year. The figure comes as the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration says the number of traffic fatalities across the country is up by more than 10% from last year. Though the department says it's too early to draw conclusions about the national trend, they point to more people on the roads amid lower fuel prices, as well as the proliferation of smartphones as potential reasons. In Alaska, the Highway Safety Office says its data show three-quarters of traffic deaths are connected to driver behavior, such as speeding, driving while impaired, and not using seat belts properly. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Zachariah Hughes, Rachel Wall-Holtz in Anchorage, Quentin Chandler and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Davis Hovey in Nome, and Daisha Eaton in Cannonball, North Dakota. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, supporting Alaska's workforce and operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977. Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight, from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. And by
GCI, keeping Alaskans connected to live the life they choose. GCI is an Alaska-born and raised telecommunications company and a proud supporter of Alaska Public Media.
The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2016 Directory for Older Alaskans. To order the directory or to learn more, go to seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.